ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ Last time we saw the verses, starting with verse 9, where in verse 9, Bhagwan gave adjectives, his own description. And the reason that description was given was for us to meditate, to contemplate upon them. Any one word is enough. We don't have to, it's nice if we can memorize the whole verse, and it's nice if we can remember all the words. But if we can't, and if we just take one and hold on to it and really, really contemplate deeply on it, that will be enough. There is, because they all mean, ultimately they all mean the same thing. And then Bhagwan goes on to say in verse 10 that then such a person who has contemplated upon those words prayana kale, at the time of his departure, his mind achalena, the mind is not moving in space time, where the mind moves space time and objects. Either I think I should be, you know, maybe it's too cold now, I should be in Mexico in a warm country, or I should think, oh, you know, summer was so nice. So the mind is going in time, the mind is going in space or in objects. Oh, I wish I had, you know, something. So these are the three parameters where the mind runs. But this yogi who has meditated, contemplated on those names, his mind is now no longer moving. That's why achalena, chala is to move. It is not moving anywhere in these three parameters or in any parameters for that matter. And he has complete devotion. Bhaktya yukto yoga balena, balena strength. He has the strength of yoga. Because how does strength come? Strength comes from practice. How do I become a strong driver? How do I become a good cook? How do I become good, better, best? Is practice and practice and practice, more and more practice. So this person has contemplated and practiced yoga, which we are talking about now, Hatha Yoga, throughout his life. And because of that, at the end, at the time of departure, he can control. Mind is so controlled that the pranas get automatically controlled. Mind is subtler than the pranas. I told you last time, pranas and mind, the root is the same. So you control one, the other one gets automatically controlled. So if the mind is that much under control, the pranas are definitely under control. And then the pranas he brings over here and then releases them from the top of his head. And when he does that from the Brahma Rantra, when he leaves, and this is how all the yogis, when we say he took samadhi, they took samadhi, then that's what they've done, is because they can keep the life force within them at will. As long as they want it, they stay there. And Santananeshwar, Bhagwan Shankaracharya, nobody knows, but probably. So, you know, those who have taken samadhi, samyak, sahatam param purushama, purushama maiti divyam. Now, one who has done all this definitely reaches that Parama Purusha, which is the supreme abode of which Bhagwan is talking about. And then it is said that in 11, he says, I will tell you about that abode now. That's what he says. I told you this verse is from Kathopinishad. The Karmakandins think that, oh, just when we chant this verse at the time of death, that soul will go. No, that is not correct. The soul has not done anything and now somebody else is chanting for that soul. It doesn't work like that. So the Karmakandins chant this verse at the time. Kathopanishad in general is chanted at the time of funerals and Shraddha ceremonies and all that. But what here Bhagwan is saying is that Akshara Padam, that imperishable post of which the Vedas talk about, I will explain it to you now. And then he says, Sarva Dwarani Sayamya Mano Radhi Nirudhicha. So all the apertures are now under control. The mind is not allowed to run out of any of the normal apertures that we do. Eyes, mind goes out through the eyes, the ears, the tongue, etc. And then he holds his pranas and then chanting Om, he releases them. Because at the last minute, now he's thinking of Om, and he has understood Om as Aksharam Paramam Brahma, not as some name or something. So then Omite Aksharam Brahma Vyar. So when he's Anusmaran, he remembers Anusmaran. He remembers after he has done a lot of studies, understood it, contemplated it, removed all the doubts, thought about it. Then at the last moment, very easily this Om comes to him, and immediately that whole meaning comes to him, because throughout his life he has contemplated on the meaning. So that's why in his old age or at the time of death, when he doesn't have that much physical strength, it's okay, because this has become a part and parcel of his psyche. And then he lets go of his body. Sayati paramangatam. He reaches this paramam abode. And then ananya chetaha satatam. So satatam tad dhatu, continuously. When a person, yo mam smarati nityashaha. So this way, unbroken, tat dhatu is tat, it means unbroken. So satatam means continuously, unbroken. Ananya chetaha means the mind is not allowed to run into other channels. So the mind is now only thinking about the Lord. When the person keeps on thinking like this continuously, then for such a person to gain me is very easy. He says, I am very easily available. Point is, we do not think about him. That is what it is. Because our mind is very extroverted. So if we can make our mind introverted and constantly think of the Lord, think that he is with us all the time, then he says, I will be easily available. And why should we try to reach you, Bhagwan? What is the big deal? He says, the big deal is that punarjanma na vidyate. There will be no rebirth. Why? Because this sansar is a dukkha ale. It is an abode of sorrows alone. And I told you, sukha becomes dukkha and dukkha always remains dukkha. And that's why Bhagwan Buddha has made that statement, sarvam dukkham dukkham, sarvam kshanikam kshanikam. And kshanikam, because kshanikam means impermanent, it's fleeting. And because whatever is fleeting can never give you permanent happiness. It is fleeting. How it can give you permanent happiness? It can't. And that's why it becomes an abode of sorrow. This world becomes that. So then this Mahatma, he doesn't have any punarjanma. The one who has meditated on those verses, then done yoga, practiced yoga, and at the end, let go of his pranas, chanting Om. And not only just chanting mechanically, understanding the meaning. Okay. Now he goes into a sort of different topic. So 16, we will start with 16. Abrahma bhuvana lokaha punaravartinorjuna mamupetya tu kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. Once again, Kathopinishad. Worlds up to and including the world of Brahmaji are subject to rebirth, O Arjuna. But he who reaches me, O Kaunteya, has no rebirth. So Bhagwan is once again drawing our attention to the fact. See, Kathopinishad, there are three things. Karma, there is Upasana, and then there is Jnana. Okay, so karma here means karma yoga. Huh? So karma is not just sakama karma, but nishkama karma. And then Upasana is the worship of the Lord. So contemplating on the Lord. Karma and Upasana both fall under karma, under action. Upasana also is action because the worship is there. So what Kathopinishad says is that there are these rituals that people do. And in the present day, the priest is just chanting the verses. Nobody is explaining the meaning. And the host is being told, do this, offer this. And it is done. And it's totally mechanical, very honestly speaking, right? It's only in the mission where Gurudev would always explain why this is being done, why that is being done, etc. So this, the Upanishad says that one who is doing this karma like this, even that has got merit because he is doing good karma. He is doing yajna, he is doing prayers, he is doing good karma. That has merit. But the merit is a little bit higher when he does it with the understanding. So karma plus upasana. And this karma plus upasana gives higher worlds. And karma and upasana can take you up to Brahma Loka, which is the 14th, which is the highest world. This is what Bhagwan is telling here. A Brahma Bhuvana Loka, these people who do karma and karma, and along with that, they do have the understanding. By doing this in a very meticulous way, it is extremely difficult to do. Because the reason it is difficult is there are very strict rules about karma. So those, if they are followed, but they can be followed. Doesn't matter if they are strict rules. They can be followed. And there are people who follow. So they will reach this world. But he says, O Kaunteya, please understand. Mamu petyatu, but, tu is but. But he says, no matter whether the person even goes to Brahmaloka, it is a place of return. So efforts you're putting in the same, if the same efforts are put into jnana, into understanding the supreme reality, effort is the same, gain is less or more, which one will you take? But the effort is in different directions, okay? Please, and it's not the same effort, it is the amount of effort which is the same to do that karma and upasana, and same amount of effort but to understand. So there is not a physical doing so much, but a mental purification and an intellectual clarity. So it is effort. We need effort to put, to make the mind pure and to understand clearly. We need effort for that. Okay, we also need effort for karma. Effort is the same. In one, you're going to a place of return. In one, you're going to a place of no return. Which one are you going to pick? This is what this. So this is why Bhagwan says, Punarjanmana Vidyate. So, Sant Ramdas in his Dasbodh and also in Manache Shloka, there's verses to the mind. He has written 205 verses to the mind. One of the verses says, oh mind, please understand that the womb is a very, very painful place to be in. Please understand that. So because there are verses to the mind, so what he has done is written 205 verses addressing his own mind. Oh mind, have devotion. Oh mind, take the name of the Lord. So there are instructions to the mind. And there he says, mind, please understand that there is a lot of pain in the womb. So why do you want to go through that again? This is how he says it. This is why this punarjanmana vidyate becomes. Because we might think, you know, what is wrong? I will take birth and I've got a good life. I will have a good life. But we don't know that. And that's why Bhagwan is also warning. Okay, Bhagwan is telling. Now Bhagwan goes into the topic of creation and destruction and of time. And we'll see why he does that. So 17. Sahastra yuga paryantam arhadyat brahmano viduhu sahastra yuga paryantam arhadyat Brahmano viduhu ratrim yuga sahastrantam teho ratra vido janaha. Those people who know the length of the day of Brahma, which ends in 1,000 yugas, and the night, which also ends in 1,000 yugas, they know day and night. Okay. So we have our day and night, which is very easy for us to understand. 24 hours we can understand, 12 hours day, 12 hours night, or whatever. Now there is 18 hours night and 6 hours or whatever day. We understand that. See, concept of time is now being explained. As these numbers go on increasing, truly we have no concept. Okay. Say we know 1 mile, we know 2 mile. Okay. We might know, you know, Calgary's X number of miles. That much we might know. But when they talk about the sun, you know, 12 light years away, suddenly it is not miles anymore. It is like light years away. What do we really understand? We don't. As it goes, increases, we have no understanding. So there is no understanding of time. What he says here is, Brahmaji, just like we have one day and one night of 12 hours and 12 hours, whatever, he also has his day and night. But his day is sahasra yugas, sahasra, so 1,000 yugas. Okay, see, there are 4 yugas. Let's start with that. So we have a little bit of an understanding, right? We have 4 yugas. We have Satya, Treta, Satya, Dwapara and Kali Yuga. So 4 yugas make 1 kalpa. It's 1 kalpa. So this 4 means 1,000 yugas is 1 day. really do we understand even here? Bhagwan has given, sorry, Gurudev has given this. See, on the bottom of page 30, the next page on 17, Satya Yuga consisting of 1,728,000 years. Treta 1,296,000. Dwapara 864 and Kali Yuga 428. If you see this, Kali Yuga is the smallest. Check it out. See, Kali Yuga is only 428,000. Then it's 864. Then it's 1,296, and then it's 1,728. So the best Yuga is actually the maximum number of years. See, because that's the best, right? Kali Yuga is the worst. So even then, it feels so long for us, 428,000. Anyway, so what he says is he's explaining the concept of time here. So that is one day of Brahmaji. Brahmaji is again a post. Please understand. Like Indra is a post, Brahmaji also is a post. And he rules for 100 years. His rule is for 100 years. And we are talking 100, not human years. 100 human years is nothing. So imagine his one day is 1,000 yugas. And one night is 1,000 yugas. And like that, 100 years he rules. So imagine how long he stays. Nevertheless, it is limited by time. That is the point that we have to understand. It doesn't matter, like, you know. But the point that is being made is that, yes, he has a long tenure, but it will end. It does end. Okay, so he says those who are the knowers of time, they say that, and this is Bhagwan's humility, because you think Bhagwan doesn't know that, but he always says, the wise man say, so that shows his humility. We always say, oh, I know, you know, I will tell you, it's not like that. So he says that this is one night and one day of Brahmaji, okay? And what is being now said is that when he... Just if you understand it at the individual level, when I open my eyes in the morning, my day, my waking state, my day starts, right? And at night, when I close my eyes, pralaya happens. The world ends for me. When I sleep, if I sleep at 9 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, for me, my world ends. It is destruction, right? It is destroyed. So with Brahmaji, what is happening is when he opens his eyes, he's in one day, this whole cycle of creation goes on. 1,000 yugas happen in his one day when he wakes up. You understand? That's what is meant. Like in my waking day, maybe 10 hours happen, right? Suppose I wake up at a particular time and I go goes to sleep. Maybe I'm awake 10 hours or 12 hours or something. Maximum 10 or 12 hours. So when he's awake, 1,000 yugas happen. And then when he goes to, when there is destruction, then that again, 1,000, that much time passes. That much time there is pralaya. And then when he opens his eyes again there will be the cycle of creation. This is how creation is happening. Now what he's explaining in 18. Avyaktatvyaktayas sarvaha prabhavantyah ragame ratryagame praliyante tatraiva avyakta sanyake. From the unmanifested, all the manifested proceed at the coming of the day. At the coming of the night, they dissolve verily in that alone, which is called the unmanifested. See, creation and destruction is now Bhagwan is taking up. For us to understand that truly there is nothing like creation and there is nothing like destruction. It is only recycling, which I have mentioned to you before also. But here again, it is coming up, right? Rather, when I mentioned it, it's from here only. So I'm going to read the next verse and then we'll take both verses together. Bhuta grama saevayam bhutva bhutva praliyate ratrya gameva shapartha prabhavatya haragame. this same multitude of beings, very underline that, the same multitude of beings are being born again and again and are dissolved into the unmanifested helplessly, O Partha, at the coming of night, and they come forth again at coming of day. Okay, so let us now understand this. If we take at the individual basis, like I told you, when I wake up in the morning, then my day begins, my world begins, the world gets manifested for me, and I do whatever that I have to do. And when I go to bed, the world is going on there, but for me, it is dissolved. All right. So what happens with Brahmaji's day, which is comprises of 1000 yugas, when he opens his eyes, this creation comes forth. Now, point is, where is this creation coming from? Is it a new creation? Now, okay, if you take the individual example, when I open my eyes, do you think that suddenly I'm in a different place, different family every day? Or is it the same? There's a continuity, right? Same yesterday, whatever worries I had, whatever joys I had, they will continue today. Nothing has changed. I'm in the same, it continues. So whatever got destroyed per se in my sleep, this external world, same world is coming back to me. It's not like I sleep here in Vancouver and suddenly I wake up in Paris next day. There's nothing like that ever happens. So same thing with Brahmaji. So when this creation happens, creation goes on, and at night, his night, this pralaya happens. So when the creation is happening, whatever went into that pralaya, same thing. That's why Bhagwan says, this same multitude. That's why you have to underline that. This same multitude of beings are being born again and again. So to understand that destruction, death doesn't really mean destruction. It is only a recycling. The jivatma's body gets back into the five elements, because the body is made of the five elements. It'll go back into its five elements. The jivatma will go into pralaya. Okay, so that's why the word used is manifested and unmanifested. It is not said completely destroyed and then reborn or born again. It's not said like that. So it goes into it is an unmanifest state, means it is not available. And then at the time of creation, this same jivatma will come back with whatever desires it had carried. When the jivatma leaves the body, for an ignorant person, there is a baggage that is being carried. That baggage of vasanas, it is in subtle form. It is not like a physical baggage. It is in subtle form, that those vasanas have to be fulfilled at some other time. And creation happens when these vasanas start to fructify. Okay, so what happens is, in pralaya state, in the dissolution state, in the night of Brahmaji, the sattva, rajas and tamas gunas are in equilibrium. And they remain in equilibrium as long as the vasanas are also quiet. You know, they're quiet. They are not fructified. So at some point in time, the vasanas start fructifying. They're like sprouting, right? They want to come out. Now what happens is, there is an imbalance created in the sattva, rajas and tamas equilibrium. And that imbalance is what then creates the world. But the world is created out of the same material, the five elements. And who are the jivas that are coming back? They were already there previously. They became unmanifest. Now the same multitude of beings are being born again and again. So this is the Hindu standpoint on rebirth. So we believe in rebirth. This is where it is. If somebody asked, how do you know this? You can point out to this chapter. Here is where Bhagavad Gita says that, yeah, there is rebirth. And that's why we say that death is, it's nothing. It was the person was manifest. Now he's unmanifest, he or she. And he will become manifest. Only thing, he will not be manifest in the same body, because that body has merged. So there will be a different body. Okay, who gives the body? His own karmas. So that's why I've told you many times, if I have desire of sleeping 22 hours a day, then I get a body of a cat. If I have desire of having many, many children, then I get body of a pig. Whatever desire that I've harbored, if I want to become an actor, day and night I think of acting, then I will be born in a family of actors or in an environment which is conducive to that. So it is not that Ishwara gives us birth or Ishwara gives us sorrows or Ishwara gives us joys even. Ishwara is karma phala data as per the karmas that the jivas have done. And that is why one of the instructions is, at least whatever actions you're doing, do good. You have to do action, then do good. And in the initial stages, yes, maybe you do have some selfish motives. It's okay. It's okay. At least don't do bad deeds with selfish motives. You do good. And what happens is, as you keep doing it like that, then at some point, your mind will change. So, two reasons. One is to tell us this, that creation and destruction, death is only a recycling. So this is also meant for us to get out of the fear of death. You know, more than death itself, we fear death. We fear, there are many people who fear their own death. Now, there are many who don't fear their own death, but they do fear the death of their near and dear ones. The fear is there, right? So this portion is meant for us to understand. If we can have knowledge, will alleviate fear. Once you have knowledge, see, that's why this knowledge gives fearlessness. This is what Bhagavan Shankaracharya has said in his commentaries, that the greatest advantage of this knowledge is fearlessness, like on a day-to-day basis. Of course, liberation is there, but that is something. But at least even in this life, if we can live fearlessly, we're constantly in fear, right? This will happen, that will happen. What will happen if this happens? What will happen if that happens? So at least that sort of fear, if we can alleviate it, life will be much more peaceful. And that is the reason that this, because it feels like a digression, creation and destruction he has brought in suddenly, right? But it's not. It's to explain to us the concept of time. It is also to explain to us that this Krama Mukti is there. Of course, one is Krama Mukti, but if you keep on doing karma and upasana all the time, you will only go to points of return. So why don't you put the same effort into jnana, into knowledge, getting knowledge, which will take you to a place of no return. All right. Help. And okay, another keyword in this verse is helplessly. Okay, see, when we study chapter 4 and Bhagwan said, I, keeping Maya under my control, have taken birth as birth. So that was not helplessly. Bhagwan himself controlled whose womb he's going to be born, where he's going, in jail. Bhagwan Krishna wanted to, in jail, in the middle of the night. Sri Ram in a palace, in the middle of the day. So they themselves have decided everything. So that is not a helpless birth. Ours is a helpless birth. Why? Because it is being dictated by the type of actions that we have done in the previous lives. And so we have no control over what womb we will come in, what type of birth we'll have, what type of experiences we'll have. We have no control because already that trigger has been set in the past life. So that helplessly also is a keyword here. This same beings being born again and again and helplessly, O Partha. So they, at the coming of Brahmaji's day, they helplessly, they come out. They have no choice but to come as per their this thing. And that is how Ishwara is karma faladata. And at pralaya time, they go into unmanifest. Okay? So please understand that. Then, parastasmatu bhavonyaha avyakto vyaktat sanatanah yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsuna vinashyati. But verily there exists higher than that unmanifested avyakta another unmanifest which is eternal, which is not destroyed when all beings are destroyed. This word avyakta, please understand, because see, in these verses also, avyakta sanyake praliyante tatra vyakta. See, it is there in 18. So avyakta has two meanings. Okay, one avyakta is Brahmaji's avyakta, which means Brahmaji's night. Okay, unmanifest. But then what he's talking about higher avyakta is this, which is beyond the unmanifest, which is the substratum upon which this drama of manifestation and unmanifestation, both of them are happening. So if you remember chapter 7, there is Jiva and then there is Ishvara and then there is the Turiya. Okay, so this is what earlier avyakta referred to Ishvara. If you take Jiva and Ishvara, then it referred to Ishvara. But here what he's referring to when he says avyakta is the Turiya state, which is of course also unmanifest, not known by the senses. Okay, so it's like waves is vyakta, manifest. Ocean is avyakta, but water is the substratum of both. That is what he's talking about here. So, and that he says, nashatsu na vinashati. See this, this avyakta of Brahmaji, it is becoming avyakta at night. In morning, it is becoming vyakta. It is unmanifest at night. In the morning, it is manifest. So unmanifest, manifest is going on. In our life also, every night, unmanifest world is becoming unmanifest. In the morning, it is becoming manifest. But the higher avyakta that he's talking about, he says that never gets nashatsu na vinashati. It never gets destroyed. That doesn't, the higher avyakta doesn't become unmanifest and manifest. You will see if we if we take our states, three states, waking, dream and deep sleep. So waking becomes unmanifest in dream and deep sleep, right? Waking is unmanifest. Dream is unmanifest in waking and deep sleep. So one of them will become unmanifest in the other two, during the other two. Okay, but then there is that supreme consciousness which never becomes unmanifest. It is there in the waking state, it is there in the dream state, and it is there in the deep sleep state. So that is what he's referring to here, this higher avyakta, he says, that never gets destroyed, that never becomes unmanifest. This is what is meant here. So in the cycle of creation and destruction, there is manifest, unmanifest, as per Brahmaji's day, Brahmaji's night. And that is also called avyakta. But then there is a higher avyakta which never gets destroyed. And that he's telling Arjuna, oh Arjuna, you must understand that. And that is what you need to reach. Yah saha sarva bhut, sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu. So when all this becomes destroyed or unmanifest, what remains is that supreme consciousness, which never, which is either you take it as always unmanifest, and it is manifest when you realize it as your own self, but it never gets destroyed. Okay, it's the same thing. Now, then if the question is, okay, then at least is this the supreme? Because he started off this topic saying that this Brahma Loka is not supreme. Remember, Abrahma Bhuvana Lokaha, that's where he said that this Brahma Loka also, if you attain, it is a point of return. If it is a point of return, it cannot be supreme. So then the question arises, then, okay, is there something supreme? And that's why he's saying, yes, there is something supreme, which is a point of no return. And that's what he says in 21. Avyaktokshara ityuktaha tamahu paramam gatim yam prapyana nivartante. Taddhama paramam mama. What is called the unmanifest and the imperishable, that they say is the highest goal path. They who reach it never again return. That is my highest abode. See, once again, Bhagwan is saying, they say. Never in Bhagavad Gita has he said that. Otherwise, he says it is my opinion. See the humility? He has used the words, it is my, in my opinion, this is how it is. But the wise people say, sages say, they say, everywhere he uses this. So what he's saying is that this unmanifest and imperishable, that is what is the highest, not Brahma Loka or not any of the lokas. Because from there, it is a point of no return. You will never come back. That dhamma, and that is my abode. That is my real abode. That is my final abode. It is not this Vaikuntha Loka or the Goloka or this Brahmaloka or this that loka, none of the lokas, but Yam Prapya Na Nivartante. And again, he will repeat this in 15, chapter 15. Yad Gatva Na Nivartante. He will repeat it. He is telling again and again, right? And Paramam Gatim. So this is the abode of the Supreme Reality, from where we look at and then we only see the absolute vision. So a person who has attained this liberation in this life, whenever he looks at the world, he looks at it from that angle. So he will always see the oneness and the multiplicity. When we look at the world, we see multiplicity. But when he looks at the world, he's looking from that vision. From that vision, the world will always appear one, as one. Because he will look at the essence. He will look, it is like, you know, a lady, we walking into a jeweler's shop and we'll see so many ornaments and we'll be like, oh, this is necklace and that is bangle, that is ring. And so our attention is only on that name and form. Whereas if if a goldsmith walks in there, he's only thinking gold, 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 right? That is the difference. That is the difference between an ignorant person and a realized master. So when the world is the same, the shop is the same, there is no difference in the shop. Both the lady and the goldsmith, they're both walking into the same store. The goldsmith is only looking at the gold, how much gold is it, gold, this. The lady is looking at the design and the, you know, make and the size and the name and all that. That is the difference. Okay. Purushasya para partha bhaktya labhyastvananyaya yasyantasthani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. That highest Purusha, O Partha, is attainable by unswerving devotion to him alone, within whom all beings dwell, by whom all this is pervaded. So Bhagwan is once again introducing the topic of devotion, because question then arises, how do I gain this? And so he says, Purusha sa paraha, that Purusha which is supreme, means Purusha here, that supreme abode which I talked about, a point of no return, O Partha, is attainable by ananya bhakti. Ananya word also comes again. Ananya means exclusive of all other things. Ananya means when the devotee only considers the Supreme Reality as the only support. It is the last final stages when Draupadi was being derobed, when she let go of her hands completely. So what did she do? She said, okay, this is it now. Only Bhagwan can help me. So that sort of behavior we see in the greatest of devotees, you know, Hanumanji, Mirabai. Poison was sent to her, she just drank it. They sent a snake, it turned into a flower garland. Because in the mind, there is no other thought other than Bhagwan. Ananya, exclusive of everything else. For us, we are thinking of a thousand, even when we think of God, we think of so many other things. So that exclusiveness, that is what Bhagwan is saying. The one who is exclusively thinking of me alone will come to me. In Sant Tukaram's life, there is a, you know, he used to only sit in the temple and do, you know, chant, sing bhajans. They would all come to him. And in the house, there was poverty. Because he didn't work, so where the money will come from? So his wife used to get very irritated. Then finally, one day, one farmer said to him, you know, that I need somebody to watch my field. So why don't you come and you just sit there and you watch? But there also what he said, yes, yes, I will. Because the wife was telling him, you must earn some money and bring home and we have no food to eat and all that. So when he sat there, because of this ananya bhakti, he could not think of anything else other than Vitthal Bhagwan. So his entire attention, it went to Vitthal Bhagwan. And here the cows came and they ate the whole field away. And when the owner came, the farmer came, he got so upset. He said, I asked you to protect the field from these animals. and the animals came and did all this destruction, and where were you? He was with Vitthal Bhagwan. So he said, you're fired. Of course you're fired. Like, you're not going to, he's not going to keep him. But what happens in these cases is, because that bhakti is so real, when he came home, his whole front, veranda was full of grain. It was more grain than what that field would have yielded. So immediately he called the farmer and he said, you take your share. Whatever you think that field would have given you, it's here. You take it. So of course, this is how Bhagwan protected him. And then whatever was remaining, the wife thought, oh, very nice, very nice. You know, so she went to tell the neighbors here and there. He stood out on the road. He said, you come, take grain. You come, take. So on the road, people were walking. He said, you take. So all that grain he gave away. This is how it works between the devotee and the, you know, Bhagwan, right? So Bhagwan gave him. He says, you take. So by the time the wife came back, again, no grain in the house. But he never worried. This is what is meant by this Ananya Bhakti, this Ananya word, exclusive of everything else. So to recognize that there is nothing else other than God. See, what I think is, oh, I need that food for my hunger. And the devotee thinks, no, God is there. So how I will feel hungry? I'm full. I'm full. So recognition that there is nothing other than God, thinking of nothing other than God. And then, you know what? God only takes care of you. Very honestly speaking. He does. Because you see, he knows that this person is not thinking of any. He's not thinking of going to work and then earning. That's what we do. That's what we think, oh, I earned. I have my pension. Now I can live on that pension. It shouldn't be like that. It should always be that, okay, God is looking after me. And whatever I need, I will get. That's another thing. Not that I have greed for, you know, a big car and a big house. God is going to give that. No. But whatever I need, it will come to me. So that faith, when one has, then to him within whom all beings dwell, by whom all this is. So then this, again, tat dhatu is come, tatam, yena sarvam idam tatam. So that supreme reality, which is pervading in and through the creation. So like in a cloth, there is horizontal and vertical threads, right? So the horizontal and vertical, both threads are God only. So everything is God only. You know, that's how. Okay, so rejecting all of the supports and then to allow him to manifest through us. So when we, how do we allow him to, what does it mean by allowing him to manifest through us is to not act out of ego. See, there are two, technically, if we were to see now, we see that there is a reflection happening, okay? And the reflection itself is thinking that I am the real one. So that is the ego. So there is the ego which thinks that I am the self and I am the body and mind and intellect. And then there is the pure consciousness, which is only the witness principle. Like the two birds on that tree in Mundaka Upanishad. One bird is pecking at the fruit and enjoying the fruit, whereas the other bird is only watching. So what we want to do is we want to reduce our ego so that only whatever comes out is directly from the pure consciousness. So when we do not react to situation, when will that happen is when we don't react to situations. And how do I react to situations? Because I like certain situations and I don't like. So that's where the reaction comes. So when we stop those sort of reactions, then know that you're functioning through the pure consciousness is functioning through you. And that is the whole idea of that flute of Bhagwan Shri Krishna, where Gurudev has always said, you know, be the empty flute. Be like the empty flute of Bhagwan, then Bhagwan will play his melody through you. But what happens is our flute is not empty. It is full of ego. How that melody will come out when there is ego? So everything what is coming out of is out of ego. Then it is noise. It is not music. So this is what is meant by Ananya. Okay, so two, three meanings. Ananya is when you exclusively think of you, nothing else. When you think that he is the only support, there is nothing else. When you allow only him to manifest through you. In the case of Sant Tukaram, when he told the farmer to take, but when he distributed, that was all through pure. He could have said, okay, now I've done with the farmer. Now I keep everything, right? Then that would have been not out of through the pure consciousness. This was like he saw, okay, there are other people like me, let them take that way. Okay, so this is what. And another like manifestation, when we say, see, the Lord is all is the source of happiness, right? So when we are miserable about something, then know that we are functioning as the Jivatma. Because the Jiva is always limited, miserable. But when we are happy, then it is pure consciousness functioning through us. And I do understand that it is hard to remain happy when bad situations come to us, which they do. But then what we should do is at least remain equanimous. You know, don't shake. Avikampena, Bhagavan in chapter 10, he says. So don't shake when things come. Okay, so what comes to us, that's why Gurudev has said, what comes to us is our prarabdha. We cannot avoid it. It doesn't, no matter what we do, what is going to come is going to come. But what we have a choice is how I respond to that situation. Am I reacting to it or am I responding to it? So reaction would be when I start complaining. Why did this happen to me? How did this happen to me? I was so careful. One of my friends fell and broke her femur, you know. And now, because she used to always think, oh, how can people fall? If you're careful walking, you won't fall. No, you will fall because it's prarabdha, right? So now how you react to it, reaction would be, why did this happen? Complaining, you know. Blaming, blame game. This is, oh, my doctor didn't do this, or this one didn't do this, or that way. Response would be, okay, this situation has come. Now, how do I deal with it? And with a calm mind, whatever is to be done, you do. Nobody is telling you not to do, right? So that way. Okay? All right. Now, missed one? No. Okay. Yatra kale tvanavrutim avrutim chaiva yoginaha prayata yantitam kalam vakshami bharatarshabha. Now, at what time path departing yogins go never to return, as also to return that time path, I will tell you, O chief of Bharatas. The topic now that Bhagwan is starting is of Krama Mukti. I've told you that there are three types of muktis, three types of liberation. One is Videha Mukti. Videha means when the body falls, there will be no more new body. That is number one. Second is Jivan Mukti, means while living right now in this body itself, there is complete cessation of sorrow. There is moksha. There is complete cessation of sorrow and attainment of complete happiness. And then the third one is Krama Mukti, which is, Krama is stages. So there is liberation in stages. Okay. So what happens in Krama Mukti is you go to higher and higher abodes until you reach Brahmajis, from where you could return, but there is a chance that at the end of that whole cycle of creation, you could get liberation. And that would be Krama Mukti. The whole problem with Krama Mukti is, we have no living proof. Nobody has gone there and come back and said that, yeah, I reached Brahmaloka and then I got Krama Mukti from there. We don't have any proof. Jivan Mukta Purushas, we have proof. We have seen, you know, masters, spiritual masters who are liberated while living right now. So there is concrete proof of Jivan Mukti and Videha Mukti. Videha Mukti also, there is no proof. Jivan Mukti, there is concrete proof. So that's why we should aspire for that where there is proof. Where there is no proof, nobody, why should we go for that? And effort is the same. So why not put it for this? But nevertheless, Bhagwan now is explaining. So he says, while departing, Bhagwan now says, there are two paths. One is the northern solstice and the Uttarayanam, and this, that he will talk later. But anyway, here. So departing, yogins go. So there is the two paths, one which goes to a point of no return and one which goes to a point of return. This is what Bhagwan is saying. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop here today, 23 to 28, five more verses. So this is this is just this verse 23, and people, and basically point of no return is those people who have got jnana, knowledge, right? And people who have got karma and upasana, who have done karma and upasana. So basically what is happening is it boils down to those who have done karma, sakam karma, karma with some desire in mind. So for that fulfillment of that desire, they have to come back. Because I do something, because I desire something, then for that fulfillment, I have to come back. But if I do something without any expectation, any desire, then there is no need for me to come back. Then what happens is my mind gets purified and it goes to a point of no return. I'm going to stop here and complete it. In one more session, I will complete it. Now, what I wanted to tell all of you is that if we could have a class on January the 7th, it would be good. Because on 18th of January, I'm traveling. I'll be going out of town, out of country, actually. And I'm returning on February 13th. So on the 7th, if I can complete this topic, I don't want to leave it halfway. So 7th, I will complete it. And then 14th, we need not have a class. Or if you want to have just a session on question answers, we can do that. But I don't want to start a new text for one day, one lecture. There's no point. So the next text, and I don't know which one it is when they tell me, then the next text, I will need about a week to prepare after I come back. So I will start the class on February the 25th. Okay. So 7th January will be the last class. I'm here in town on the 14th, but I don't want to start just one lecture. I will start the new text on the 25th. All right. Because I'm coming back on the 13th and I will need some time to prepare the text. Is that okay? Any questions? No questions? All clear? It's a relatively simple, chapter, relatively. But certain concepts, this is where it becomes clear. One is of rebirth, that, yeah, we do believe in rebirth, right? So because people say there is no rebirth and I'm not. No. There is rebirth. Second is that there is nothing really like destruction. It is recycling alone, and all the jivas are coming back. So we have been there. And this point he also had said in chapter 2, where he tells Arjuna, oh Arjuna, there have been many, many births for me, and there have been many, many births for you, and I know them all, you don't know them. This is what he had said in chapter 2. I know all of them, you don't. And in chapter 4 also, he had said that my birth is not it is not a forced birth, but it is a birth out of choice. Whereas here he says the jivas, helplessly, they have to come back. So it's a forced, we get forced to be born again. So if we are going to get forced to be born, then at least let's have an evolved birth. So for at least that evolved birth, then let us do actions in such a way that they don't bind us. Or let us stay on this spiritual path, we pray, that I don't fall from this path so that I will pick up the thread. Because in chapter 6, he said, whatever point you left it at, you'll pick it up in the next life, right? So if you don't get a human body, how you will pick up that thread? So at least then we can work towards that. That is the whole idea. And of course, if we can get liberated in this life, nothing like it. But this is what it is. Okay? So these are the points we need to understand.
Jayaji, can I ask just one question, just to clarify? We are talking about bringing the mind, thinking of the Lord all the time. At the same time, being a human being who is not reached that level of perfection, have a tendency, our mind will have a tendency to go to different thoughts.
Correct.
Even when you to think about the Lord, the mind can go in different ways.
Yes.
So if a person is thinking that whatever I'm thinking of, because the Lord is in and through all the creation.
Yes.
So what I'm thinking about, ultimately it is the Lord.
Yes.
So if that understanding make it slightly better.
Yes, it does. Actually, you see, this mind running out, there are two things that will prevent the mind from running out, or like you say, One thing is, either you understand this whole creation to be an illusion. If it is false, then your mind is not going to. Or the second method is yours. You look at the whole thing as his glory. Come in chapter 10. That's why chapter 10 he has given to tell us, if you look at the mountains, if I'm in the Himalayas, I'm in the Ganges, I'm in the Samaveda, I'm in the Japa. This is, so whenever you look, and it doesn't have to be Himalayas. That's why I can see the lion's heads from my house. I look at them and I say, okay, that's my Kailash Parvat. That's where Shiva and Parvati are sitting, right? We shouldn't say that, oh, Himalayas, now where am I going to? No. We have our own Himalayas. You have the Rockies. We have our mountains, right? So whatever mountain you look at, you can say, or whatever Fraser River we see. Okay, that's like Ganges. That's why Gurudev in Piercy has called it as Il Ganga, na? That river Il. Gurudev calls it Il Ganga, Gurudev. That's why he's done that. So you can superimpose. Yes, and that is allowed. Yeah, that is a deliberate superimposition, and that is fine. Actually, talking of that, good, it's reminded me. This friend of mine, Padmaja Joshi, who also has done the course, she did the course after me. She is now taking in PRC and the Memorial Day weekend, May. And I'll forward the flyer to you guys as well. I have to still forward it. She's taking the text Vedanta Chintanam, the text written by Guruji. Swami Tejumanji has written, and what is the English name? English name is what is the name? Yasmina, do you remember the name? Vedanta Chintanam it is, and I can't...
In practical life, Gita in practical life.
Vedanta in daily life. The idea of the book is how you translate this knowledge into your day-to-day life. So the knowledge is telling us, I'm not the body. What does it mean, I'm not the body? How do I treat the body then? That those instructions he has given, and that is the text that she's taking. I will forward you I'm supposed to be forwarding to Vancouver as well. There is a survey in that, so at least if you can do the survey and send it to them. It is happening for 5 days on the Memorial Day weekend in May, US Memorial Day, which is after our Victoria Day, right? So I think encouraging all the students from here to go. It's a very good topic, because we always have this question that, yeah, this is, you know, I'm that Satchitananda, I'm that substratum, I'm all pervading. What does it mean to me in my day-to-day life? And that's why it's called Vedanta Chintanam. So you think about these things. That's what Guruji has done, the thinking. He has written verses himself and he has given an explanation, and that is the text that she's going to be teaching. So I will make sure that I forward that email to everybody. Okay, so do think about it. It's in PSC. And I'm going to say that my closing prayers. Everybody have a very happy holiday season and a happy new year. I will see you all on 7th of January. Okay, which would be then our last class. We'll finish the chapter. And then anytime, please let me know what is the next text so that I can be, you know, prepared. Okay. All right. Good night and have a great holiday. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.